Good morning, everybody. We're going to get started in just a moment. Thank you for all for coming. Before I invite Judy Moore, our TMR member and a member of the Board of Trustees at Syracuse University, before I invite her up to introduce our speakers today, I just wanted to remind everyone that there are two more sessions of Thursday Morning Roundtable in December before we go on break until February 1st. So next week we have some gentlemen coming to talk about drones and how they impact Central New York. And the following week we have interfaith cooperation and conflict transformation. So that's December 7th and December 14th. So now I ask Judy to come up and introduce our speakers.
Good morning, everyone. Hello, hello. Our local SU trustees have already met with Mike and Bea about this important information. And even though we know a lot about the university, as you might expect, we nevertheless learned an awful lot. And I remember saying to Mike and Bea at that time, coming to this venue with the people gathered here, it's kind of speaking to the choir in a way. We realize you already do appreciate the contributions of Syracuse University to the community, but you too will be learning a lot of very helpful information, and we know that we can count on you to help disseminate this around the community. So we have Bea Gonzalez and Dr. Mike Haney here this morning. And in a way, since, as I just learned, Dr. Haney has addressed this group a number of times before, and I think everybody in this room must have worked with Bea at one time or another on some sort of community project. So we can keep these introductory remarks pretty short. So I'll start with Bea Bethida Gonzalez, has more than 30 years of experience in continuing education, as well as a distinguished record of public service. Bea joined University College in 1984 as an academic advisor and quickly rose through the ranks. After serving as associate dean at University College, she was appointed interim dean in 2004 and dean in 2007. And in February of 2015, Chancellor Kent Siverud appointed her as a special assistant to concentrate on student affairs. In March, Bea was selected to serve as vice president of community engagement for Syracuse University. And as part of that role, she co-chairs the committee that was just formed yesterday, to plan for the university's sesquicentennial celebration. In other words, the university is going to be 150 years old in 2020. And the whole community, we hope, will think about ingenious ways, exciting ways to celebrate the founding of our wonderful university, one of the few in the country named after the city it happens to be in. In addition to her dedicated community service, Bea was elected president of the University Professional and Continuing Education Association 2014-15. She has served on and is a member of several professional organizations, including the Association of University Summer Sessions, the Education Commission of the States, New York State Representative, and the National Association of Latino Elected and Appointed Officials. That's just naming a few. And you know she's had leadership positions on numerous local organizations and nonprofits. Bea has a distinguished career in public service, having been elected to public office three times. She became the first Latina on the Syracuse City School District's Board of Education in 1991, and the first Latina elected to the Syracuse Common Council. Actually, she started her political career by being elected class president of the senior class of Corcoran. I got that from an interview that Stan Lindhorst did of Bea, which when I was Googling Bea, turned up, and really do that yourself because you learn a lot about Bea's home life and her background and her family, which I won't go into this morning. Bea graduated from SUNY Binghamton with a BA in political science. She received a master's degree in public administration from SU's Maxwell School of Citizenship and Public Affairs. Now we turn to Mike, whom I know you've also met. Dr. Mike Haney is the Vice Chancellor for Strategic Initiatives and Innovation at Syracuse University. He is the Barnes Professor of Entrepreneurship in the Whitman School. He is founder and executive director of the Institute for Veterans and Military Families, known as IVMF. He arrived at Syracuse University in 2006 after serving 14 years as an officer in the United States Air Force. Shortly after his arrival, Dr. Haney created the Entrepreneurship Boot Camp for Veterans with Disabilities program at the Whitman School, an initiative designed to empower military veterans through entrepreneurship. Mike later went on to launch the Institute for Veterans and Military Families at Syracuse University in 2011, the nation's first interdisciplinary academic institute focused on informing and impacting the policy, economic, wellness, and social concerns the nation's veterans and their families. Today's IVMF programs impact more than 25,000 veterans and family members each year, and the IVMF is widely recognized as the nation's hub of academic thought leadership related to the post-service concerns of Americans' veterans and military-connected families. Mike has brought more than $60 million to Syracuse University. I think that's probably a conservative estimate. And you may be aware that there's a building going up on the corner of Krause and Waverly that will be the National Veterans Resource Complex. It is going to be fabulous. And it has made Syracuse University the number one private university for veterans, recognized throughout the military. As Vice Chancellor, he is also responsible for overseeing the Office of Veteran and Military Affairs, the Office of Government Community Relations, other special projects. I mean, Mike is everywhere. He is the Chancellor's right-hand guy. Actually, it might be the other way around. Dr. Haney currently serves as a member of the U.S. Secretary of Labor's Advisory Committee on Veterans Employment, Training, and Employer Outreach, and as a member of the Advisory Committee for the Corporation of Public Broadcasting's Veterans Coming Home Project. 2015, former U.S. Secretary of Veterans Affairs Bob McDonald appointed Dr. Haney to serve as the Vice Chairman of the MyVA Advisory Committee, a presidential task force chartered to set the course for long-term excellence and reform at the Department of Veterans Affairs. Mike earned a doctorate in entrepreneurship and business strategy from the University of Colorado at Boulder. And so be prepared for some really fabulous information. Thank you very much. Mike and Dee.
Good morning, everyone. So I have to tell you, I just got back from Puerto Rico, and it was an amazing experience. I went to check in on my dad, who'll be 87 in January, and two months plus of no electricity is a phenomenal experience to watch an island with 3 million people figure out how to navigate roads without any traffic signals. Think about that for half a minute. But I will tell you that in Puerto Rico, people, the resilience is amazing. Nature, just Mother Nature herself, the greenery has started to pop. It's been raining pretty much every day since the hurricane, which has really enhanced the greening of the island. So if you get a chance, Puerto Rico needs your tourism dollars. It needs your volunteer efforts. So if you get an opportunity, and it needs your resources. So if you get an opportunity to help the recovery there, it would be much appreciated. I know that's not what you wanted me to tap dance about, Mike, but I thought I'd take the opportunity to do that anyway. So on your tables, you have some of the documentation that we've been sharing that highlights the key points of our economic and community engagement. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, B. We could have fun with this back and forth. So it is a pleasure to be here. B is an old hat with this group and this forum, and I have had the privilege and honor of presenting a few times on a few different topics. What we're going to talk about today is something that I think by the time we're finished, hopefully, will make all of you proud. It's an effort that we undertook beginning. Honestly, when I was asked to take over government and community relations last fall, but we really got into this work early in 2017. And that is what we wanted to do as B and I worked together with a larger team to really set a path for Syracuse University's engagement in our community. And when I'm talking about engagement of community, I'm talking about both the things we do to support a vibrant and thriving cultural community, social community, but also from the perspective of the role that Syracuse University does and can play in economic development in this community. We wanted to start, we are an academic institution, and what that means is we often like to start from data and really understanding where we're at today such that we can chart a path for future engagement. So as this slide highlights, really what we wanted to do, the focus of the effort that we're going to talk to you about today, what we do to enrich and advance the lives of the university, the community's residents. To do this, last spring, we set in motion two complementary studies, and we brought in outside experts to perform those studies for us. We did that for two reasons. One, we wanted to be able to leverage the opportunity to benchmark what we learned from those studies relative to other universities, and therefore it made sense for us to bring in firms that have expertise working with other universities, our peer institutions, our aspirational peer institutions, trying to essentially do similar work at those institutions. Two, we also wanted to the extent possible, be as objective as possible. And it made sense that instead of myself and B and the team producing this report internally, it made sense that it would be conferred additional legitimacy and credibility and objectivity if, in fact, we brought somebody in from the outside to do it. So again, the purpose of the work was really to set the foundation for a future strategy that has yet to be defined, one that from the perspective of the university will require engagement across our campus community. That's really in large part B's next challenge is to work with the campus community, our students, our faculty, our employees on identifying, you know, as we look to the future, what is the role of Syracuse University in our community as engaged with community organizations, community leaders. What we want to do today is share with you some of what we learned in the context of this effort. And I'm going to talk about, the business school professor is going to talk about the economic development pieces, and then I'm going to turn it over to B to talk about what we learned from the community engagement study. And I'm going to just get right into the data. I'll skip the high-level conclusion slide. You know, first, at the highest level, when we look at what we learned about Syracuse University as a driver of economic impact in our community, it's actually pretty profound. About $3.5 billion in combined economic impact in the five-county region that New York State defines as Central New York. $1.1 billion of that comes from the daily operations of Syracuse University. That is our, you know, purchasing, procurement, visitor and student spending, et cetera. And importantly, that $1.1 billion supports about 15,000 jobs in the five-county region surrounding Syracuse University. And then if you add to that $1.1 billion of economic impact from our daily operations, the impact of other institutions and companies that are either directly or indirectly tied to Syracuse University, you know, startup and spin-off companies that have resulted from technological innovations that have been developed at SU, that have been commercialized, either directly or indirectly, that adds about $2.4 billion. and again is responsible for about 14,000 or so jobs in Central New York. I'll break that down a little bit, some of those numbers down, and highlight a few components of that economic impact for you. The research enterprise at Syracuse University is robust and supports a significant economic impact in the community, about $65 million of economic impact annually, about 841 jobs. And here is the first time where the font change has messed up my slide. I do apologize. But I want to foot stomp this one because this is something that I think is really important. Our students, Syracuse University students, as a driver of economic impact, I think are often underappreciated in the context of our community. 84% of all Syracuse University students come to this region from somewhere other than the five counties that surround Syracuse University. While they are here annually, they spend in this community about $149 million during each year that they study at Syracuse University, generating about $104 million in economic activity in this community annually and supporting about 1,800 jobs. And I think on another slide, I have a more fine-grained look here. If you look at Onondaga County specifically, it's 86% of the students come to Onondaga County from outside the region that study at SU, and the impact is even more profound. In terms of our employees, just over 6,000 employees at Syracuse University. Total payroll that goes to those employees, about $513 million a year. Again, importantly, 86% of Syracuse University employees reside in the five-county region surrounding the university, and that payroll of $513 million, the vast majority of it is spent on the expenses of daily living right here in Central New York. Big procurement operation at Syracuse University, about $194 million a year in annual procurement spending. The very, very significant majority of that spending happens locally. This is the difference between a private institution and a state system where many of the state procurements are done in a centralized manner out of Albany. You know, our procurements are primarily local, and this is everything from, as you'd expect, office supplies to construction to a significant value in services procurement, facilities, local consultants, things like that. But again, a significant impact in the community. I talked briefly about startups and spinoffs. This is, if I'm being very transparent and candid, this is something that I think we could do actually much better at. While that's a big number, $2.3 billion that we can either directly or indirectly identify as economic output resulting from businesses that have been created over the years as a consequence of Syracuse University's existence, if you will, in this community. This is one area that when we do compare to other institutions, there's an opportunity for us to do a lot better here. And I think we will see a focused effort across the university with a recently new hire at the university, a new senior vice president for research, John Liu, to transform and make more robust our technology transfer office, our office of commercialization, such that we can get more of the tremendous innovations that are happening inside our schools and colleges out into the world and leverage opportunities to commercialize those, both for those who they will benefit in terms of the nature of those innovations, but also as a driver of economic development in Central New York. Travel and tourism, again, when people talk about travel and tourism associated with Syracuse University, they instantly go to the Carrier Dome, and I may have even fed into that what I'm going to describe as a myth by putting a picture of the Carrier Dome on my slide. But truth be told, there is above and beyond the SU athletics, SU is a significant driver of travel and tourism dollars to Central New York. If you are ever on our campus in the early fall or the spring on a Thursday or Friday, you will see thousands and thousands of high school students from all over this country and their parents, for example, who travel to Syracuse University as they're looking for, they're doing their high school college tour, trying to decide where their son or their daughter is going to go to college. Academic conferences, symposiums, et cetera, there is a significant travel and tourism draw associated with the presence of Syracuse University in Central New York, such that it supports about $98 million in economic impact to the community and about 1,800 jobs that are directly tied to travel and tourism associated with the university. Taxes, this is another one of those opportunities for me to bust a little bit of a myth. It is true that Syracuse University is a nonprofit, like every other college and university in America. And as a consequence of that, we do not pay taxes directly. However, we are responsible for generating significant tax revenue in both Onondaga County, City of Syracuse, and the five-county region, to the tune of about $254 million a year in tax revenue that is directly associated with Syracuse University. And that is tax revenue generated by those organizations and institutions that do business with Syracuse University, that have to scale up operations as a consequence of demand coming from Syracuse University. Onondaga County, if you... I wanted to just drill everything I've talked about up until now has been based on the five county region surrounding the university, but I did want to drill into Onondaga County just very, very briefly to highlight that if you look at Onondaga County and the gross regional product, the economic output that comes from Onondaga County, the impact of Syracuse University is actually pretty profound, and you can look at the numbers. I will go to the last bullet that probably is the best way to quantify or to drive home the significance of that output. Syracuse University's economic output by itself exceeds the combined economic activity generated by the agriculture industry, the construction industry, wholesale trade, transportation utilities, and public administration combined. So if you take the combined economic contribution of all of those industries in Onondaga County, SU's economic output exceeds that combined total. And public administration is local government, by the way. So it is a significant impact on Onondaga County and the city of Syracuse. With that, I'm going to transition to B.
So in my role as Community Engagement VP for University, I see my role as really being a driver of opportunity for the people in our community, for our agencies, for our faculty, our staff, and our students, right? So Syracuse University's commitment is longstanding. If you go back to the founding of our university, which because I'm part of the 150th anniversary committee, I'm reading the history of our university, I am learning that service was one of our founding values, right? And so that would be way back in 1870. The other thing is that we are going through an academic strategic planning process on campus, and the goal of that process is really to bring us into a focus as a one university and figure out where all our appropriate interconnections are, really drill into interdisciplinary work, and that's how I see community engagement. So it's taking a long time for those of you that are a little frustrated with me, because I know some of you are, about what's going to happen next with community engagement. We are still in the process of assessing. We are taking 11 academic strategic plans, right? We are evaluating those plans, and we want to then align those plans with the needs of our community, because I don't want to be in a place We're bringing things to our community that they don't want. I really want this to be an environment, an opportunity, an experience where we're serving as a platform to help our community really approach and resolve and address its prime issues and concerns. So as you can see, we have $51 million that annually goes to support community-connected programs. Some of these programs are very long-standing. Some of you know the Gebbie Clinic, the Bernice Wright Early Childhood Center, Syracuse Stage. These are some of our long-standing programs, and then some of our newer programs to include the phenomenal work we're doing at the Southside Innovation Center, the work on the Near West Side, and most recently, some of the engagement work that we've started to enhance with the Northside Learning Center as a key example. So here we are. As you know, I have always been a people person. I've spent a career developing human capital in this community, and it was really exciting to me when we actually drilled down to see how much we were spending on human capital in terms of direct access to Syracuse University, in terms of scholarships, and we spent about $20 million a year, and that helps about 800 students in our community annually. I didn't realize the number was that high, right? So if I didn't know that, I know that most of you didn't know that.
So 3 weeks ago, I went down to the Syracuse-FSU football game at FSU. And before the game, it was Military Appreciation Day at Florida State. And before the game, there was a flyover of three Navy F-18s that flew over the stadium. And after they landed, the president of FSU invited them up to, the pilots up to watch the game from the president's box. And I noticed one of these young pilots looked about 16 years old, had an orange t-shirt on underneath his green Navy flight suit. And I could just barely see the top of the Syracuse Block S coming out of that t-shirt. So I walked up and I introduced myself to him. And turns out he was a 2014 graduate of Syracuse University, who after he graduated, went to officer candidate school, was commissioned as an officer in the Navy, went to flight school, now flying F-18s out of California. But the better part of the story, the more relevant part of the story, is this same young man came to Syracuse University as a Say Yes student. Syracuse City Schools came to Syracuse for free, because he maintained a solid GPA while he was in high school. He said there is no way that he would have been able to attend Syracuse University if it wasn't for the $20 million in regional access scholarships, and in this case, the Say Yes program. So it's a good example of the kind of impact that these programs can have on local students.
So specific to Say Yes, $5 million of that $20 million goes to tuition expenses for our Say Yes scholars at Syracuse University. And note that the Say Yes scholarship at Syracuse University has no income limitations, right? It is to any Say Yes graduate, any student that graduates in the district that's admitted, regardless of income, receives a Say Yes scholarship at Syracuse. So, and then the other thing that we do, we learned that we do some things that nobody else does. And one of the things that we do that not very many people do, I'll qualify it that way, is that we provide direct support to our not-for-profits through sponsorships and engagement with them to the tune of $3.5 million. So, I mean, we're there, right? We're there financially for people. One of the issues is that the need is so great in our community that we can't meet the need, that we can't meet everybody's ask, right? And we get a lot of them. And so critical to the way we're moving forward is to work with our community to prioritize needs, to leverage our resources for maximum impact. And that's really critical to the work that I'm going to be doing with the schools and colleges. What's the next one, Mike? So we don't talk about this too much, but our investment in our community goes beyond the work we do with agencies and people, right? We have a commitment and support public utilities and local government, and to the tune of, I never remember these numbers, Mike remembers them, but you have them there. I mean, people don't realize that central contract, right, that the university has. And one of the new things is that when Chancellor Siverud renegotiated the intermunicipal contract with the city of Syracuse, he extended that contract to include the south side in terms of the fund, in terms of the grant dollars available to the neighborhoods that surround the community. So that was the beginning of some of the shift in focus, or just some of the shift in terms of our community engagement. I think ultimately, our students, right? College work study, how many of you have some of our students in your agencies? Just curious. Okay, there's a few hands going up. The federal mandate is a minimum of 7% of your students, your work study dollars should go to community-based work. At Syracuse University, we're at 35.4%. So again, it's another way that Syracuse University shows its commitment to community through the way it invests its dollars. I think the key here is that our support shifts based on need, right? Just because we did it once doesn't mean we're going to do it again. It shifts based on need. But we counted up to 260,000 hours of volunteerism. That's not the full number, because community engagement, service learning, and outreach work on our campus is very decentralized. And so we did the highest level evaluation that we could, but we didn't drill down into Greek Life and some of the other organizations. That's next, right? So I know that number will easily double. Okay. So here we are, the path forward. The goal, alignment with academic strategic plan, institutional core, institutional values, accountability. We really have done a lot of amazing work in our community with little to no accountability. We don't have appropriate partnership paperwork with the people we're working with. We don't have evaluations. We don't have assessment documents. So those are all the things we're doing to shore up our work, to make sure that what we're doing is being impactful. Sustainability, that's key, right? We're not going to get involved in a project that we don't think can find its way to sustainability unintentionally. We might do that intentionally, but we're not going to do that unintentionally. Mike?
So part of what I'd hope everyone takes away from this conversation, and I would humbly, B and I would humbly ask for your help, is, you know, this narrative that sometimes evolves in the community that Syracuse University is stepping back, or none of that could be further from the truth. There is no evidence in anything we learned that there is anything other than an advanced commitment to engaging in this community as a consequence of the past 5 to 7 years of the evolution of this work at Syracuse University. What we want to do is get better. What we want to do is figure out how we engage with purpose in the community and engage in a way that I am convinced, I know Chancellor Siverud is convinced, that the most impactful engagement, both as a driver of economic development and also as an institution that can address social, cultural, and economic concerns of residents of this community, we will do best when we work to align a growing and robust Syracuse University with a growing and robust city and community. And to B's point, a lot of one of the big takeaways that we did learn from this effort is a lot of our engagement is not as connected as it should be. It is not as synergistic with both where Syracuse University is looking to grow and be globally excellent, and how that parallels with opportunity in this community. And that really is the focus of our effort moving forward. So with that, Bea and I would love to field any questions.
Thank you for your presentation. The numbers are impressive, but sometimes they hide the more human side of SU's contribution. So 48 years ago, a small group of us faculty members and families in the community asked for space from the university to start a school that would house typical children and children on the autism spectrum. We were the first school in the country to look at inclusion in this particular way. So 48 years later, we now have 150 children in a building across from Nottingham High School, and we could not have done this without SU's initial contribution to giving us a Barrack building at Skytop. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Definitely, Syracuse would not be as livable a community as it is with Syracuse University, were you not here. One of the things that many universities around the country are doing now is developing university-based senior communities. It has a tremendous economic benefit in retaining seniors in our community rather than having them move to warmer climates, retaining our tax base here, integrating them into the community. And with the migration of students from the South Campus to the main campus, it seems like that would be a perfect spot to develop a senior-based university community. Any thoughts about that?
Well, my first reaction was I did see some folks around you giggle when you said preventing them from moving to warmer communities. Like there might be a little skepticism there, but South Campus is the future of South Campus is an open question for the university. You know, we just completed a campus master planning process, really a vision for the future of the university from an infrastructure perspective for the next 20 to 50 years. One of the things not addressed in that process is the future of South Campus, and I think that will be a big focus of effort moving forward. I think there have been a lot of things proposed. Your idea, I'm going to add to the mix. I don't know if I want to comment on the merits of it, but it certainly I think there may be some challenges given the climate. That said, keeping talent in Central New York, I will speak to that bigger issue. One of the reasons, I'm an entrepreneurship professor, and one of my big frustrations as I have the privilege of working with really smart, talented Syracuse University students who, a great many of whom want to leave Syracuse and not go work at GE, but they want to start a small business, keeping them here is really, really hard. And it's a huge missed opportunity for Central New York. And I think this idea of how do we create a talent strategy for this region, I think Syracuse University would be very, very interested in being part of those conversations, in terms of how we keep whether it's young talent or senior talent from leaving this region. I think if we can't get that right, everything else we try to do from an economic development perspective is probably going to fall short of our expectations.
Could I add a little bit? So I've had the opportunity to meet with some of the developers that are looking at building in our community. With the idea of student housing, but as the student housing market begins to get saturated, they're starting to have different ideas, right? And I'm encouraging them to have different ideas. The other thing is that the university has hired a very dynamic expert in real estate who's putting together a strategic plan for the real estate agenda of the university, and he'll probably be a great TMR speaker in about 4 or 5 months, yeah. And maybe you'll hear more then.
Yeah, we have, to B's point, we have just hired for the first time in our history a senior vice president for real estate. So I think a lot of those issues and questions will be the focus of his work.
Thank you very much for the presentation, and I'm not here to dispute your numbers. I have two comments, though. One, if a family's making $250,000 a year, they shouldn't get a free ride or any scholarship from Say Yes. That should go to a more needier family. Secondly, I'm gonna be the big downer, I guess, in this whole room. The Carrier Dome. you forced it on the community. You took $15 million of taxpayers' money. You put it in the middle of the university or close to it without any thought to how the neighborhoods were going to be affected. Full disclosure, I live in Seneca Turnpike, so I know firsthand what happens on Seneca Turnpike, what happens on Brighton Avenue, what happens on Ainslie, what happens on Jamesville, what happens on Comstock, all these roads that the city is responsible for taking care of. And you give money, but no thought to those roads, any other roads coming from the north, the west. And please don't insult my intelligence by telling me, like I was told in 1985, that having a Rolling Stones concert at the Carrier Dome was an educational event. The money that you make at the Carrier Dome should be spent on the community that needs the money, the roads. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill.
I hear you. I can't claim to have been it. I was still in high school in 1985, so I was not here when those decisions were being made. But point taken. I hear you.
But Bill, note that as a part of the 81 conversation, right, some of these issues are being considered. And the issue around the scholarship, that decision was a decision to really maintain a middle class in our community, right? That was the whole reason and rationale for Syracuse, because we made that decision in combination with our city leaders, was really to have that scholarship available to the middle-class families in our communities as well, to support our public school system and keep a middle class in our city, so.
Good morning, and thank you for the presentation. Everything is relative, right? So I was wondering if you had looked at, or if the consultants that you worked with have looked at a comparison to perhaps other large universities that are housed in mid-size cities in our country, and how SU stacks up to those with regard to that sort of commitment. I mean, they have large staffs, and they pay taxes, and they buy houses, and things like that. So I was wondering how Syracuse compares to other large universities in mid-sized urban areas.
Yeah, I'll speak to that from the economic piece, and then I'll ask B to speak to it a little from what we learned from the community study. The firm that we hired to do the economic impact analysis is a globally known firm that specializes in doing this type of work for large universities and for large nonprofit organizations. They've done more than 1,000 of these studies over the last 10 years or so. The great benefit of that is we did have the opportunity to do some institutional comparisons, and quite honestly, they were fascinating. One of the things that was fascinating is it was actually hard to find. It wasn't as simple as looking at our peer institutions, because we had to look at peer institutions that also existed in an economic environment that was somewhat similar to Syracuse. That actually was more challenging than you think. We looked at Texas A&M University in College Station, Texas, similar size, similar. But as an institution, Texas A&M is very different than Syracuse University. They have a large school of agriculture, a much more it's as a public institution, a much more robust set of programs around STEM. That said, our numbers in that context were pretty similar, with one notable exception, and it goes back to an earlier comment I made. When you look at the impact of businesses, local businesses on the economy that are impacted by the university, we lag way, way behind. Again, even though those numbers were large compared to many of our institutional peers, and it goes back to this talent, keeping talent in the region. The fact that we struggle keeping talent in the region results in a situation where often, not just from the perspective of students starting businesses, but even technologies that and new innovations that might come from the academic enterprise at Syracuse University become commercialized somewhere else other than Syracuse, New York. But the comparisons we did to peer institutions were challenging to make sense of, because, you know, for example, we consider Northeastern a peer institution from an academic perspective. However, comparing a university situated in Boston to a university situated in Syracuse, it's apples and oranges.
I wasn't talking about the impact in the same. I'm talking about the actual, you know, university contribution to the community, and that.
So that's easier, and B's got that.
Well, it's somewhat easier because again, it's finding comparisons. So we compared the community engagement report looked at 12 other institutions to include Northeastern, Northwestern, University of Pennsylvania, University of Pittsburgh, and Washington University in St. Louis. And then we did secondary research with Upstate Medical, Lemoyne, the University of Rochester, RIT, Cornell, Vanderbilt, and the University of Michigan. And we had seven learnings from that, right? The first is that no one has a playbook. Everybody creates their engagement strategy based on their own community, their own history. Secondly, we learned there's seven findings. Well, there goes my pen. Benchmark institutions do not distribute significant financial grants in their communities the way we do, okay? Third, we learned that benchmark institutions have different strategic philosophies underpinning their strategy. We learned that...
So there's clear frustration with those learnings.
Yeah, yeah. So we learned they're part of the. It's all in that executive summary.
The big piece there is the regional access scholarships is something that is unique to Syracuse relative to our benchmarking. This focus on providing a pathway to the university through direct financial support. We do not see in many other institutions. And then the direct granting of financial resources to community organizations was something else that was unique relative to the benchmarks.
But to your point, Greg, what I want to say is that there are things that I learned or that I'm trying to replicate that I've learned from my peers. And one of them is a workforce strategy, right? A workforce strategy tied to our campus framework to really begin to address some of the underemployment and unemployment issues in our community. And so in partnership with the Upstate Minority Economic Alliance and in partner state with the equity unit of Center State CEO, we are developing a work train kind of effort, you know, to match our needs to do workforce development on two levels. On a personal level, probably partnering with another agency to do basic skills training and workforce readiness training to move them into jobs. And on the other level is to bring in, to really exceed any expectations around minority business women and veteran-owned businesses. So that strategy is in play right now as we build the NVRC.
Real example of that will be the construction of the Veterans Resource Complex. We are setting a new standard against which we're going to introduce minority-owned businesses, veteran-owned businesses, women as subcontractors on that project, and we're holding our prime contractor to that standard.
And two other areas that we're looking at is now that we have a VP for real estate, is a real estate strategy that is impactful to our entire community, not the university. I think those are, and procurement is another area. We do very well in the procurement area, but a lot of universities are going into consortia around procurement, and that's another topic that is kind of on a slow burn right now, but up for discussion.
The question I have, what is the impact of Route 81, the final decision, on Syracuse University? It seems to me that's an important part of the community. And as you look back in the past history of the 81, it really wasn't wanted where it is in the beginning, and we were stuck with it, going right through the center of the city. Any positions that you've taken as far as Syracuse University?
I like how B, I just, as soon as she said the 81, B looked at me. And so Syracuse University has not, and it's unlikely we will take necessarily a public position on 81. We have through the University Hill Corporation stated a set of principles that we would like, whatever the option is, we would like the option to be able to deliver on a set of outcomes for the Hill area that are important with regard to traffic flow, accessibility, particularly given that there are multiple hospitals up there as it relates to access to those hospitals. All of those principles, if you will, were made publicly available and published in the Post Standard. But you know, it's the university's preference that we stay out of the political debate related to this.
Well, good, because that leads right into my question. First of all, when I saw all those numbers, next time you do a report like that, I'd like to see them in some sort of context. If you're talking about how big your payroll is, I'd like to know what percent of the people actually make living wages and what part of your staff gets food stamps. Which leads directly to one of the perks of working on the campus is the tuition, and the federal administration wants to play with it in the form of tax reform. Will the university be bold enough to talk about that at all?
We've been more than bold. We have engaged in a very within the extent of what we are allowed from the perspective of legal prohibitions on lobbying as a nonprofit. We have been engaged with all of our elected representatives. The chancellor of the university sent a very pointed letter related to this issue to Congressman Katko. We have been in touch with, obviously, Senator Gillibrand, Senator Schumer, all of our professional associations, the American Council on Education, the AAU, et cetera. We are engaged and supporting all of their efforts related to this particular issue. Your point is beyond well taken. The impact that the current proposal could have on students, on employees of Syracuse University, for the example of now making taxable dependent tuition benefits, for example. There have been more than 3,000 children of SU employees that have been educated through tuition benefits that are available to them as employees in the university over the course of the last 5 years. The proposal on the table is to make those benefits now taxable, which could have very significant financial consequences. So we are doing everything within the law to make known and take a very bold position as it relates to this issue.
Cadoos, I was the first full-time employee of Syracuse University Research Corp. You can tell us what the income from that might, or not the income, but the revenue might be that would go into your 60 years later.
Yeah.
But the second question is, the dome is being renovated. It's going to be renovated. Will we also renegotiate the no sales tax versus sales tax on things that are sold at the dome at that time, so that there will be some cash that will also come to the city of Syracuse and the county of Onondaga?
Well, interesting. Go ahead.
The last is... the chancellor said he was going to move people back to the campus. We have seen, since he has said that, there have been thousands of beds created in the east side of Syracuse. Did that fit in with the chancellor's expectation?
When you say beds created, could you explain to me
yes,
what you mean by
student
that?
Beds.
But
student housing.
Oh, okay.
That is not so, on the campus.
Yeah, so I'll answer the... I'm going to go through those, see if I... So on the sales tax and the... Congress may take care of that one for you, too, because in the same bill that that we're talking about that will make student loan interest taxable, tuition remission and tuition benefit programs for graduate students and employees, they have also included a provision... that is focused specifically on college and universities that would make taxable any revenue generated from branded or licensed products. So everything from cups with the SU logo on them to T-shirts, that will now be taxable. So it may be a resolution to that particular issue an answer to the question, if you will, that has nothing to do with Syracuse University, but is the United States Congress. As it relates to the student housing issue, none of us, honestly, I don't think anybody saw that coming. This has been a trend across higher education, and that developer set finally turned their attention to Syracuse University. We were not at the top of the opportunity list, and as they're building these kinds of properties at other major universities across the country, as those markets became saturated, I think what has happened is turned their attention to Syracuse University. It was not part of any plan that Syracuse University had. Certainly something that, as we were going through a master planning process, was somewhat unanticipated, and yet to be determined, that I think the long-term impact of these properties on the plans that we may have related to the future of student housing at Syracuse University.
I wanted to ask you guys, and Bea knows I've talked to you about this before. I'm old enough to remember and have taught in the Humanities Studies program. That was about 20 years ago, and know all the good reasons why it suddenly folded, or not suddenly, but eventually folded. But what I wanted to know, is there any plans? I'm now old enough to want to take courses in these things, and my sisters and friends tell me of these amazing programs at the universities that they're in towns with, and is there any thoughts to develop something back like that again, like an OLLI or a continuing education program, particularly for the community, that's more than just signing up and taking a course?
Well, I think what I've been trying to do is we do have a humanities center at Syracuse University that does offer programming, lectures, access to discussions to the public, and it's just getting the word out. The issue of courses, I would turn to the Dean of University College to think about what you've asked in terms of his own strategic planning and development.
The guy with the orange tie back in the back there.
But I think one of the things that I'm learning is that people are not aware of the opportunities that currently exist, right? And so figuring out how to get that message out is really important. And the Humanities Center that does exist, which is also has a partnership with Cornell and U of R, and I think one more institution, offers programming almost on a weekly basis that is open to the public. So I'll make sure that Eileen gets out the information about the Humanities Center to this audience.
The university is located in a sanctuary city, and SU is heavily dependent on attracting international students. What is the university doing to continue to attract those students in light of everything that's going on from the federal government? And also, that's enough.
So you are absolutely correct that Syracuse University has a long commitment and a partnership with the global community, if you will, as it relates to bringing international students to the university. The Chancellor has made very clear to include, you know, putting it in writing that commitment is still central to who we are. Matter of fact, if you look at our academic strategic plan, one of the primary pillars of that plan is to act to be a global university. We've put significant resources in place to support our international students that are already, because I think there are really two parts to your question. You asked about a forward-focused strategy to continue to bring folks here. I think we also have to talk about what are we doing to support those students who are already here, and we've taken significant steps to that end to ensure that they have access to legal resources and other supportive services and resources so that they can be successful as students while they're here. At the same time, honestly, when it will be telling over the next year, we actually did not see that much of a drop off with regard to applications from international students this year at Syracuse University. There were in some instances very country or region specific blips, but as a community, as a cohort, we held pretty solid with regard to international students this year. This coming application cycle will be very telling. That said, we continue to recruit internationally as strongly as ever, and it is our hope. What's the saying? This too shall pass. We hope that we get back to a reasonable place in down in Washington, D.C. relative to this particular issue.
Could I just add that our undocumented students are really the ones that are concerned about their opportunity for sanctuary, depending on what happens. And the university has created a committee, a task force, to really pay attention to the needs of our undocumented students. And we are developing individualized plans, academic plans, for each of those students based on their circumstances.
Please join me in thanking Mike and Bea for spending time with us this morning.